Today on Through the Word, we'll be in Deuteronomy chapter 9, tracking the country the Israelites are going into, and there's giants in them in our hills. In this chapter, Moses preps the people for some big enemies. It's not going to be easy. The Anakites are there, and if you know anything about the Anakites, that's who Goliath descended from. Those guys are 9, 10, shoot, some of those suckers are 11 feet tall. But in verse 3, God assures them, "Be assured today that the Lord your God is the one who goes across ahead of you like a devouring fire. He will destroy them. He will subdue them before you. And you will drive them out and annihilate them quickly as the Lord has promised you." In verses 1 through 3 of this chapter, Moses gives that promise I just read. But in verses 4, Moses continues the theme from Deuteronomy chapter 8, warning them of forgetting God so they don't end up like Mickey Taylor, who described killing 5 flies by saying, "Ha ha, I swatted 5 with one blow." When someone overheard it, they thought he was talking about giants. And the delusion that was perpetuated is that Mickey the Taylor was a giant slayer. The problem was, he hadn't earned that moniker. Mickey had never killed a giant. He was only capable of swatting flies. And the Israelites needed God if they were going to go up against the Anakites. Therefore, they were reminded, don't forget who drives out your enemies. They had the good patch of land, the Anakites, for a reason, because they were tougher than anyone else around them. So in verse 5, Moses tells them, it's not your righteousness, but the Anakites' wickedness that will drive the giants out. That's part of God's motivation. Imagine giant babies, big 7, 8, 9 foot tall bullies. You can only imagine what's going to happen in a situation like that. So God reminds them, it's not because of your righteousness or your integrity, verse 5, that you're going to go in to take possession of their land. But on account of the wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God will drive them out before you. To accomplish what he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, understand then that it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess, for you are a stiff-necked people. Moses should know. He had just spent 40 years traipsing around the desert with them. If anyone knew that they were stiff-necked or stubborn, it was him. And this is very close to John the Baptist's exhortation, don't say we have Abraham as our father, for God could have raised up the very stones under your feet to worship him. In other words, Moses is saying, look, he didn't have to pick you. He can get children from whatever people group around here he wants. To be stiff-necked means that you learn the hard way, and they did. That's why Moses reminds him of the golden calf in this chapter and some of the greatest flops on the flip side of God's greatest hits. When God delivers the tablets of stone, they make a golden calf. When God wants to give them manna to eat, they complain and get quail coming out their nostrils. Hey, let's cut the bull crap, or better yet, the golden calf crap. We need to remember who we are. You see, you and I are covenant breakers by nature, and Moses knew it. God knows it. It's just us that need reminding sometimes. Both Moses and John's words may not seem like the type of words that win friends and influence people, but sometimes it's what we need to hear, even if it's not what we want to hear. No sooner had Moses come down the mountain than they'd already broken the first few commandments, almost the first half. That's why in verse 17 he says, "So I took the 2 tablets and threw them out of my hands, breaking them to pieces before your eyes. When he came down the mountain from getting the law and saw they'd so quickly turned to another god, Moses realized that we by nature are covenant breakers, whereas God by nature is a covenant keeper." But here's the amazing thing. We may think that God is being hard on them. Yo, lighten up, man. Go easy on him. Give him some hope and encouragement. But remember, Moses is a prophet. Just like Jesus who told the disciples, "You'll all abandon me tonight, and one of you will deny me. Worse yet, one of you will betray me and sell me out." They couldn't conceive of it because they didn't really know themselves yet, more or less know Jesus for who he was. In fact, afterwards, when Peter is broken and restored by Jesus, he is asked if he loves Jesus, and he's asked 3 times, one for each of the denials that he's made that he knew Jesus at all. At the Last Supper, he vehemently defended himself, saying that even if all others denied Jesus, he never would. On the other side of that fiasco, Peter knew who he was. And when Jesus asked on the third occasion if he loved him, the Bible tells us Peter was hurt, but he surrendered, saying, "Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you." Peter had come to know himself, but better yet, he knew that Jesus knew him. He knew all things and still accepted him anyways. That's what's going on here. God knows that they're going to fail him. He knows his people are going to let him down, yet he wants a relationship with them anyways. It's the same with us. God knows you're going to fail him in a billion ways, and yet he loves you like a father. Hebrews says he disciplines those he loves, and he'll go after you, pursue you, and sometimes break your heart to have you close to him once again. And in the final verse of the chapter, it's God's worship that is at stake. Moses says, "God, I'm worried what they'll say about you." But if you're the kind of God who marries himself to his people through thick and thin, then the nations will marvel. Luckily, he was and is that kind of God. In verse 18, Moses says, "I fell prostrate before God for 40 days and nights and fasted. I feared the anger and wrath, so I interceded." As Moses is telling them about this fateful day, this tragic event, he's just like Jesus, who told Peter, "Peter, I've prayed for you. Satan has asked for you by name to sift you as wheat, but I've prayed for you and interceded for you that your faith would not fail." Notice that when Moses talks about the generation before him, he talks about Tabra, Massa, Kibroth, Hattaavah. Notice he doesn't say what your fathers did. He says you or we. When the Bible talks about God's people, it makes us confess what all of us have done. Why? Because we're no better. Daniel interceded and confessed on behalf of the entire nation. He was righteous. The Bible tells us he was the most righteous person on the face of the earth. So why did Daniel have to confess? Because Daniel saw himself as guilty too. The fact is, we're all guilty. In fact, the Day of Atonement was for the entire nation. Therefore, Moses includes them in because he knows that even though their fathers were like that, this generation standing before him is no better. And neither am I, and neither you, because we're all guilty. Therefore, Jesus interceded for all. Read Deuteronomy chapter 9 today, and as you do, marvel in a God who knows us so completely and so thoroughly, and yet loves us despite ourselves. He wants a relationship with you, failure and all, because, well, Jesus.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.